You know, it seems like a long time ago, but in reality, the president's shocking attempt to pull the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Agreement only happened on the first day of June. An ever-growing list of American states, sites, and corporations have rejected Donald Trump's rejection of this global pact and committed to individually do their part to stick to the previous administration's agreement. In light of these developments, what about faith-inspired environmental groups and activists? Is there a role for them to follow this model as well? Good questions, and we have the right person here to answer them. Reverend Fletcher Harper is Executive Director of Green Faith. Fletcher, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you, Welton. Good to be with you.
I'm curious, what were your first thoughts when you heard the news about Donald Trump's Paris decision?
It was stunningly disappointing and disheartening. The reality is that we had known because of steps that the administration had already taken to dismantle the positive commitments that the prior administration had made to try to enable the country to meet its moral obligations to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. So we knew that with dismantling of a lot of those steps, there was a functional inability for the U.S. to meet its Paris commitments. But then to have the announcement of the outright rejection of Paris and starting the process of withdrawal for the U.S., it was a real gut punch, so not a pleasant day.
What are your greatest concerns about this change of direction for our nation?
My greatest concern is that the science is overwhelmingly clear that this gift that is the source of support for our life, the planet Earth, that its climate is under grave stress, and that the rate of increase of greenhouse gas emissions is continuing at a level that more severe storm activity, more intense droughts, and all of the problems that result from that will be creating massively greater numbers of refugees, will be displacing poor farmers from their farms and their homes, turning them into refugees, will be putting millions of people, many of them very poor, at risk from the increased severe storm activity and the related destruction of infrastructure and homes and increased spread of disease that results from that. We know that all of these things are going to happen because of this decision. And that's my greatest concern, is that large numbers of people, most of them poor, most of them who've done next to nothing to contribute to this problem, will pay the price, along with the stability of the ecosystems that we believe represent part of the majesty of the gift of God that this planet is.
Can you even guess why the president took this step? I've been confused about it, because people that he usually listens to were telling him not to take this approach. The business community that he usually listens to was telling him how bad this would be for the economy as well as for the climate. Can you guess why the president took this step?
Well, I think if one takes him at his word, the overriding concern and the way that he framed it was concern for American workers. And I want to say that when faith communities have communicated about the climate crisis, we have done a good job of communicating about impacts on poor and vulnerable communities, frontline communities. Mm-hmm. We have not done enough talking about the importance of providing for the protection of workers, the necessary level of job training and transitional support that's going to be required for lots of workers and many communities around the country and around the world as the world makes its clean energy transition. while I am under absolutely no illusion that the president, for example, is going to bring back the coal industry we must recognize as an industry that is dying around the country and around the world, and the compassionate and substantive way to engage with and to support that community is to make sure that there is a robust level of funding and support for retraining, for continued health care, for income maintenance, for other ways of stabilizing the lives of those tens of thousands of coal workers around the U.S. who eventually will need to make that kind of transition. I also think from a political perspective, it's likely that the president felt that he could generate enthusiasm from within his most ardent base of supporters. But my concern is what really happens to real people because of this decision. And that's not good.
It just baffles me how a major leader in any country cannot answer the question, do you believe in climate change? And we can't even get that out of him.
Well, I think that's, and again, I'm going to speak very, you know, we know that within faith communities in the United States, there are faith communities who feel the need to reject that. I don't agree with that, but we must recognize that there are significant and culturally and politically influential faith communities, including many on the more conservative end of the Christian spectrum, who feel that way. And what I'd like to say publicly is to reach out an olive branch. Those faith communities are, in many cases, also supporting really important outreach, humanitarian relief in various developing countries, different types of community development programming that they operate. Those communities that they are, as Christians, committed to helping are the very communities that will be hurt most by this decision. And so what I'd like to sort of urge is that we find a way within the Christian community to open up this conversation and to find ways to act on the values that we all share, a respect for God, a respect for God's creation, the dignity of human beings, support for the flourishing of the human community. And those core values are ones that we have to come together around as a faith community if we want to see progress around this.
Fletcher, a lot of analysts have explained that this is not an agreement a country can just pull out of at the drop of a hat. What do we need to understand about that?
So on the technical level, what's good about this agreement, and it was written up this way intentionally because when you have 200 countries around the world signing on to an agreement, the agreement has to have has to be something that can withstand short-term political pressures. Mm-hmm. And so the process that what President Trump is able to do is to begin the process of withdrawing from the Paris Agreement. Mm-hmm. But that's a process that takes 4 years per the terms of the agreement. And so there is on that level, it's not something that, you know, he just snaps his fingers, makes an announcement, and it's done. I think that what matters, and this gets back to something you said earlier, is on a functional level, the federal government in the United States will not be taking the steps that it had previously pledged to take to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in this country. And that's where it is vitally important for cities, towns, states, universities, faith institutions to not just to pledge, but truly to follow through and make good on pledges to make very, very substantial reductions in our own greenhouse gas emissions. Mm-hmm. And the We Are Still In petition movement that emerged out of the Center for American Progress has been an important early stage voice for that. There are, other thoughts being debated about how best to approach this. But what I think is really important to say is that over the past 4 to 5 years because of the importance of first reaching the Paris Agreement and then supporting its adoption, a very large percentage of the work within faith communities on climate change has been focused on political advocacy around that process, which has been vitally important. We now need to add to that process a commitment to profound reductions in greenhouse gas emissions by people of faith and by their faith communities as part of this. We need to maintain the advocacy, and we need now ourselves to start to walk the talk at a heretofore at a level that up till now has been getting started, but it needs to ramp up dramatically.
Are there member groups in Green Faith who are looking to do this kind of work?
Absolutely, and in about a month's time, we believe that we'll have an exciting announcement about that. It's not quite ready yet, but this is something that Green Faith, along with many other faith-based environmental groups, has worked on for any number of years. Earth Ministry in Seattle, the Interfaith Power and Light Network, other groups have worked on reducing and have encouraged the reduction of the carbon footprint of their faith communities. So it's this is something that has been out there and now needs to take a newfound level of prominence.
I think it's important, too, Fletcher, for people in the pews, people in the streets, in their own locales, understanding that what they do can really make an impact on this critical issue. And I wish you'd just make that pitch about the importance of individuals' involvements here.
Absolutely. And I think that there are two ways I'd frame it. One is that here in the United States, we have, because of the way in which our society and economy and infrastructure are structured, the environmental impact that we have is just about the highest in the world on a per capita basis. And so when we take steps to reduce the energy that we consume, the amount of energy that we consume, to transition purchase energy from a renewable source, we literally make the impact that it takes 15 or 20 people to make in other countries. Mm. So there's a very real impact in that kind of way, which over the course of a lifetime really truly adds up. And if our faith communities find a way to encourage that kind of behavior as a norm, the impact very quickly scales up and becomes real and substantive. I think that too often there's been a tendency to write off the importance of individual behavior change by climate advocates. And, the second way that I'd frame this is, when we talk about issues like racial prejudice, we recognize the deep interconnection between our own personal values and behavior and the policies and behaviors and regulations and values of society at large. We don't make or allow for that kind of bifurcation when we talk about that. It's the same thing with hunger or poverty. Faith groups for years have recognized that the basis of a strong, humane society is where there are strong government policies that protect and support those who are poor and vulnerable, and also where local faith communities are pitching in a very hands-on way. The enormity of the problem of poverty, I've never heard a church or a synagogue or a mosque say, this problem is so big, I'm not going to do anything about it. Mm. So I think that we need to reintroduce this concept of the importance of our own personal, some people call it ecological discipleship, and be willing to learn what it means to live more faithfully in regards to our consumption habits.
The Reverend Fletcher Harper is an ordained minister who heads the Innovative Green Faith Coalition as executive director. Fletcher, you are working at such a key confluence of issues right now, faith and environment concerns. You are doing it well. I want to commend you for the way you articulate the issues as well as the way you are motivating people to get into this movement. And thanks for what you're doing, and thanks so much for being with us again on State of Belief Radio.
Well, thanks very much for the chance to be with you and your audience. We appreciate it greatly.
Well, my goodness, that's all the time we have for this week's show. There are people listening to this show right now who are having a tough time. They may be at a loss to understand how the values this country presents on the world stage have changed so completely and so quickly. Or they may be incredibly angry, caught up in the cycle of rage that seems to have infected our public discourse. We hear from these people every week, and we know this program and your generous support of this program makes an enormous difference. I want to say thank you. Thank you for your support. I hope you'll keep it up. If you've heard something on State of Belief Radio this week that you found to be helpful, I urge you to share it with others who might also find it helpful. It's easy to do that on Facebook and Twitter. Direct your friends to stateofbelief.com, where they'll find full episodes, an in-depth archive, extended interviews, transcripts, and links mentioned in the show. That's at stateofbelief.com. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. Our producer is my friend Ray Kirstein. Be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.